As a performance of the opening movement of the fifth sonata for cello and piano by Ludwig van Beethoven, a live concert from about 7 years ago, 2006, by two guys who I'm going to call the two Dmitris. Dmitri Kuzov is the cellist, Dmitri Steinberg the pianist, and they are going to traverse all five of Beethoven's piano sonatas in a recital tomorrow night at the University of Illinois, where Dmitri Kuzov is on faculty. Concert is at 7:30 at Smith Memorial Hall on the U of I campus in Urbana, in the recital hall. There's a couple of places you can hear concerts there, but that'll be in the main recital hall. And I'm very pleased to welcome both gentlemen to Live and Local today. The show is your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly, Dmitri and Dmitri. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So this is obviously not your first traversal of these pieces. When you recorded the recording we just heard, was that also of you played all five of them?
Yes.
In a series?
It was the recording of all of them during the one concert in Richmond, Virginia, about 7 years ago.
Yes.
It's a live recording.
You've known each other then at least that long. What's your personal history?
We started humbly with only three sonatas and one set of variations by Beethoven when we were both in school in New York, in two different schools. We did that at Juilliard, probably in 2004.
Or three.
Yeah. And then we added the other two sonatas and did two runs of all five, the Barge Music in New York, which is an interesting place to perform. It floats as you play, or at least rocks, right under the Brooklyn Bridge. That's kind of an interesting, very intimate setting for this.
I've heard of barge music without actually knowing what the setting was. I mean, literally on a barge under
a
bridge?
A barge.
That is correct, yes.
Yeah.
So if a large ship passes by,
your music goes in the water.
Well,
not
quite that much.
Playing is okay there. Well, it's actually a pleasure because the audience is always very nice and the view of downtown Manhattan is spectacular, which musicians can't enjoy because we're sitting towards the audience, not towards the view, but they can. The problem is not playing there. The problem is bowing. So when you play and you sit on the chair, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
But let's say if the large ship
passes by
at that moment when you finish it, then you have to stand up, and that it's a dangerous moment.
So the bowing could pitch you over. It.
Yes, it's a life-threatening situation.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But Beethoven's worth it.
Of course.
Did you? You said you were in different schools in New York. One of you went to Juilliard, and the other one went somewhere else.
I went to Manhattan School of Music.
Manhattan School of Music. And did you meet when you were in New York, or did you know each other from in Russia? No?
No, we didn't know each other from Russia.
No.
It's a big country, I hear.
Yeah.
And two rival cities, Moscow and St. Petersburg.
Yeah, so Dmitri Steinberg from Moscow, Dmitri Kuzov from St. Petersburg. What made you decide to do the Beethovens as opposed to, say, the Brahmses or I don't even know, I should know, but I don't know who else has more than one cello sonata that that one could do all of?
Well, it looks like you could do the Brahms, and I think you did.
All Brahms,
including
the transcription of first violin sonata, which sometimes played on a cello in a different key, though. It's incredibly beautiful, but very hard to play. So one can do the Brahms cycle, which will be three large sonatas, each at least half hour long.
You can do Bach.
You can do Bach Gamma sonatas, three of them. It's also an hour, 10 minutes, I would think. Mm-hmm. You can do lesser known works. I'm not sure it's going to be the entire concert. Let's say there is Fauré sonatas.
There Gabriel Fauré.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Carl Philipp Mandelbach as well.
Oh, yeah. Also, I personally did three gamba sonatas by Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, the son of Johann Sebastian.
One of the many.
So there is a few composers who decided to write more than one piece for cello, thanks God.
What about Shostakovich?
One cello sonata.
He has just one?
Two concertos, one sonata.
All right, I guess I'm thinking of the concertos as two. Yeah. These are designated, Beethoven's are as technically as concertos or sonatas for piano and cello, which I assume acknowledges the important role of the piano. I mean, people typically say, no, it's the cello sonata, and usually say sonata for cello and piano, which I think I did in back announcing the your performance. Does that imply that the cello is less active in these pieces than in some of the others, or not necessarily?
Well, the sonata spans such a long time that in the meantime, in the interim, the balance between the instruments has changed. Beethoven inherited what was known as a piano sonata with a string instrument accompanying, which is how these were usually advertised and sold. But already in the first two sonatas, even though the piano probably has a lot more notes, the cello is not accompanying. It really has an important line. But when you get to the third sonata, and of course the fourth and the fifth, which were written much later, the two instruments are really working equally hard. So it may appear that the title in the meantime has become outdated because Beethoven has moved on to explore a different relationship between the instrument, a much more balanced one.
Do we know if he played the piano role for any of the performances of premieres or other subsequent performances of this piece?
We are almost sure he played the piano with the first two. The cellist was a French cellist at the service of the Prussian king, to whom the first two sonatas were eventually dedicated. But the pianist for this must have been Beethoven. I'm also very much sure he did not play the last two because I don't think he could collaborate with another person at the same time because he was deaf.
Well, his last performance as a pianist was Opus 97, Archduke.
Right.
That was the last time he appeared in public playing piano, and it was already quite disastrous according to what his contemporaries and friends wrote.
Simply because he couldn't really hear anything. He couldn't hear.
Yeah. Of course, couldn't collaborate with other people. Yeah.
That would be a problem.
Well, you know, sometimes it happens to people who have perfect hearing.
That there are disasters happen or that they can't collaborate?
Yeah.
Well, they can't collaborate. Yeah. They can hear, but they can't actually work it out somehow or another. Well, that obviously not the case for you guys. A reminder that we're listening to I'm talking with Dmitri Steinberg, pianist, Dmitri Kuzov, cellist. Mr. Kuzov on faculty at the University of Illinois School of Music, Mr. Steinberg at the University of North Carolina School for the Arts, which is in which town?
Winston-Salem.
And you've been there for a while?
This is my third year.
And Dmitri,
this is my fifth year.
Has it been five already?
Yeah, time goes so fast.
Yeah, time does. What are some of the particular challenges of these sonatas for both of your instruments? But maybe let's say the cello first, because you said sonatas for cello, not an enormous repertoire, at least among the better known composers. But what advances, if we can say, for in writing for cello, in challenging the cello, was Beethoven accessing?
Well, obviously when you think about combining two instruments, which is two completely different types of sound production, that's already a challenge. So looking back, of course, piano. Or early pianos which Beethoven used to use in his younger years was very far from what we are having right now. But nevertheless, the problem was the same. There is a bowed string instrument which is able to sustain and develop sounds and is capable of producing very mellow attack in the beginning of the sound, and there is a hammered string instrument, such as the early pianoforte, which produces totally different sound and not able to sustain the sound. So matching these two completely different sound roles is a challenge, and it's been like this since the beginning of ensembles with string instruments and piano. So the next issue might be a balance, besides trying to come close in sound-wise. The next issue is a balance. And back in that time, in the time of first two sonatas, which is Opus 5 and the very early works of Beethoven, the balance has been a little bit different than now, because the pianoforte was rather much weaker sound-wise than the contemporary concert Steinway, of course. The cello was set up differently, and it was without endpin, and people used to play in gut strings. Nevertheless, the balance was different. So, surprisingly, now when we talk about ensembles with piano, we're always facing an issue of piano overpowering the string instrument. And it's especially easy to do with the cello, which spends a lot of time in the lower register, which is less clear acoustically in the larger rooms than the higher pitches, an instrument which are producing higher voice. Back in the time of his first two sonatas, this wasn't exactly true. So these instruments acoustically been more or less on equal terms.
So it wasn't exactly true that it was difficult for the cello to be heard over the piano.
No, it wasn't an issue at all. That's why when we're looking, for instance, to the scores of early Beethoven composition, we can find quite amusing dynamics when the piano, when let's say piano is not having a leading role and it's playing more or less accompanimental figures, it's sometimes dynamically marked even higher than the solo voice in the string.
Correct.
Instrument.
It happens occasionally, yeah.
Yeah.
So the piano will be marked up to play quite loudly.
Yeah.
Even though it's accompanying, yeah.
Yeah.
Another issue which I think is very interesting, because I've taken a few forays into the forte piano realm, is even though the instrument isn't as loud back in the day, the attack is actually a little bit harder and more distinct. And
on the forte piano.
Yes, and it's sort of a more hammered than today's piano. And that does help the lower register of the piano to remain fairly clear. Some of the more interesting challenges for me is to play chords in the very low register, very dense chords that happen in the slow movement of the fifth sonata, for instance, most of the time, because they blur so much and because they tend to sound so muddy on contemporary piano. But on Beethoven's piano, those would be very distinct. Every note would pop out very clearly.
Since you've experienced a forte piano yourself, do you find the desire, interest, or need to modify your playing on the modern piano to accommodate what Beethoven may have had in mind, or did you just figure,
very
I'm
much,
playing a modern piano?
Very much so, and especially in the first two sonatas. But I mean, to some extent, in all of them, but in the first two sonatas, the texture, just looking at the score, can appear remarkably dense and staying light and crisp and articulate is something that you do consciously because you know that maybe that's kind of the sound he was looking for. And the other thing is that Beethoven was, you know, back in the day, 1796, when he wrote the first two sonatas, was still very much a performing pianist and very much wrote the piano parts for himself. And so the thundering figure that he was, it's obvious in looking at the first trios and the piano sonatas and the cello sonatas that those were meant to be monstrous parts. So very difficult parts. And yet, at the same time, remembering that you're playing with another instrument who uses a different approach to the sound, you need to play it very light and very transparently and not to take it for its face value. Otherwise, you really overpower the cello.
If he wasn't writing for himself in the later sonatas, do you notice different writing that may reflect that fact?
It has become a lot more abstract. And people have referred to the fact that the middle of the piano has become somewhat gutted out, that Beethoven took to the sides of the instrument, to the very highs and the very lows, and very often left the middle empty. And sometimes the chords are voiced in a very, very strange way that some people again claim that if he still had his hearing, he would have not done it that way. But we will, of course, never know. For all we know, Beethoven presented those works to his publisher in their intended final form and was very much interested in having it done so in no other way. And so we will never know. That's kind of an interesting challenge that affects much of the late compositions for piano, regardless of who else we're playing with, be it the trio or solo sonata or cello or violin sonata. It has become a lot more a mind thing than a hand thing.
A mind thing?
Yes. In other words, things he must have heard in his head, but of course he couldn't have experimented with the way it sounds in different ways on the piano by just playing it, because it wouldn't make any difference to him. He wouldn't have heard it.
So the late solo sonatas for solo piano also have that.
Absolutely. I mean,
those extremes.
The last sonata particularly has moments where there's at least three octaves separating the hands, which does sound very odd today on contemporary instrument and on any instrument, in fact, because it sounds so remarkably hollow. But that's what we have. It's not there all the time, but it's there very often.
What about the writing for the cello when you go from the early sonatas to the late one? Of course, the one we've heard an example of was actually the late one.
Yeah, there's a significant difference. And his writing becomes much more virtuosic for a cello. Already in the middle period, when the third sonata was composed, it's already absolutely equal partnership between instruments. And when he progresses to the late two sonatas, especially in the sonata number 4, the technical challenge on the instrument is really remarkable. So as a cellist, I would assume that it's actually one of the hardest cello sonatas, Beethoven sonata number 4, cellistically. And why is that this way? Very possibly, as we know from the stories of his contemporaries, he really didn't care much about the suitability for an instrument. And there are the things that he heard these unbelievable pieces in his mind, and he really wanted it this way, without paying too much attention to the possibility of the instrument. At the same time, I have to say the same story happened in a way in his triple concerto, which is work from his middle period.
The concerto for violin,
cello, and piano. Or in that case, it's actually, I think, should be renamed for cello, violin, and piano.
Right. The cello does have the lion's share of the work in that piece.
Yes, and the cello part is incredibly, incredibly challenging technically. So if we look at that, and it was written during the time when Beethoven still had the possibility to communicate with the fellow artists and performers around him, there was a couple of fantastic virtuoso cellists at that time. One of them was Dupuor, whom you, I think, already mentioned, right?
Right, I didn't mention by name.
Yeah.
The cellist for the first two sonatas.
Was a virtuoso French cellist who worked for Prussian King. Right, for a while. Another amazing cellist was the Anton Kraft, amazing virtuoso, who was serving at the Esterházy court in the Haydn's orchestra as a principal cellist for a while, and was the famous known cello virtuoso. Another was actually Romberg. So if we can look at all of these figures who had outstanding ability to play the instrument, and especially in the high register, that probably suggests that Beethoven knew that the cello can be taken to a big challenge, register-wise. And he does it in the third and particularly fourth sonata, when the register of the cello is, let me count, 1, 2, 3, is at least, it's 3.5 octaves at least. It is quite revolutionary. So he's, idiomatically, his writing is incredibly difficult from a technical point of view.
So he had a reasonable certainty that a good cellist could play the pieces.
He probably did, and also he didn't care as usual.
Yeah, so there are other instrumentalists who may have been cursing Beethoven at the time.
Probably.
Violinists, most notably.
Yeah.
But the only sonata that I have personally played of his, aside from trying to play the first movement of the Moonlight Sonata, since it's relatively easy at least to get your fingers around it, is the Horn Sonata when I was playing horn. And I would say it's not overly... There are certainly challenges to it because you have to leap around quite a bit. Maybe he didn't know
it
the most
virtuosic. It has a fascinatingly difficult piano part.
The Horn Sonata.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that was probably also called Sonata for Piano and Horn. So. Obbligato Horn, right. Probably. And for those who don't know that term, it sort of means an instrumental part that sort of dances around the main part, which in this case would be, for lack of a better term. Well, you mentioned that the third sonata and the fourth sonata have some of this. It starts to get particularly virtuosic. We heard the first movement of the fifth sonata. Mm-hmm. Why don't we give a listen to the first movement of that third sonata, mm-hmm. where he's really starting to give the cellist a workout?
Yes.
And this is a long movement. We might as well play the whole thing if that's all right. And give folks a nice dose of what you can hear if you go to the recital tomorrow night. It's a recital by cellist Dmitry Kuzov of the University of Illinois faculty, and pianist Dmitry Steinberg of the University of North Carolina School for the Arts faculty. They've teamed up for a few performances in these few days where they're going to play, well, in I guess two cases, all of the sonatas, and then they'll be up at, did that in North Carolina, what, a day or two ago?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be up at Chicago radio station WFMT to do at least a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then do you have another one scheduled, another performance scheduled?
After tomorrow, we're going to play all of them in University of Chicago Fulton Hall.
Right. So by the end, you'll be ready to record them all over again.
Sure.
Yes.
But I'm sure somebody is picking them up for you as they go along. The recital is tomorrow night at 7:30 at Smith Memorial Hall in the Recital Hall in the University of Illinois campus. And Dmitry and Dmitry are my guests here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Thank you.
That was the opening movement of the third of Beethoven's sonatas for piano and cello, his Opus 69, A major, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, a live performance recorded in Richmond, Virginia in November of 2006, so almost exactly 7 years ago, I guess. And the performers, who are pianist Dmitry Steinberg and cellist Dmitry Kuzov, are going to be playing all five of Beethoven's cello sonatas tomorrow night at the University of Illinois Smith Memorial Hall in the recital hall there. 7:30 is the start time. And my guests on Live and Local today are both Dmitry Steinberg and Dmitry Kuzov. Our program today is supported by World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, with foods from around the world, including imported chocolates, truffles, cookies, cheeses, and gift baskets for the holidays. Also, find specialty ingredients like saffron, smoked paprika, truffle salt, grain of paradise, and more. World Harvest Foods, 6th and University in Champaign. So that survey of the five sonatas that you performed 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. Do you find, first, do you find any trouble listening to it today? And do you find that you are approaching these pieces any differently today as you're playing them all over again?
That I think for sure.
Yeah.
I think the approach is definitely changing.
I think we like listening to the older recordings and just remembering, shall I say, the younger years.
yeah.
And
neither of you is actually an old fogey, and it should be said.
Right. A lot of things that seemed awfully important to us back then may not hold that same importance anymore. And maybe, at least I speak for myself, I think things have gotten a little bit more streamlined, a little bit more global. Since then. But I think those recordings have actually provided us with an important kind of retrospect point of some of what was happening then that was good, and we should not ignore it because we maybe have a little bit more of a bird's eye view now on this sonatas. It can be dangerous too, because you sometimes overlook a precious detail just because the terrain is familiar, more familiar than it once was. So there's always a little danger in that.
Dmitry Kuzov, you said that pretty quickly. Yes, I think there are definitely we are playing these differently. Can you say how, without being overly technical, I suppose?
I hope that we have a slightly broader view on how we would like to play each piece or all of them as a cycle, and I think. Without going too much into details, I think, and again hope, that we actually approach this music more seriously from a structural point of view right now than we used to do.
And what I often wonder, what does that mean for a performer when you say I'm approaching it structurally, or I'm more aware of the structure than I used to be? What does that do for you?
Simply speaking, I mean, simplifying it a little bit, I would say is that when we used to do it 7 or 8 years ago, first time, we were trying in a way to find ourselves in Beethoven music. I mean, it's, again, simplification, of course.
Well, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Nowadays, I hope that we are trying to pay a little bit more attention to the composer himself, without, of course, neglecting our own existence. But I would think that we try to find more and more inspiration from the text itself without necessarily paying a lot of attention to, paying less attention how, what we would like to say in this music.
In other words, we've learned to pay our dues first, and acknowledge the text as the ultimate source of all authority in this. I think as a 20-something, you are much more likely to just go out on the limb and experiment when things are still awfully new and fresh, and there's a lot of value in that. And then you come back to the same piece 7 or 8 years later, and find yourself surprisingly that all you really want to do is to be honest to what's written, and to do your best bidding to what's in the score, what's in the music.
Well, when you first learn a piece, your initial challenge is, can I play the thing and can I get my fingers around it? And then maybe once you've proved that, as younger people, you feel you have to somehow make a statement with it.
Right. Yeah. So that, in other words, you're kind of approaching it, going on your personal crusade, and maybe that's something that both of us have moved away from in those 7 years.
Does it make any difference how you play, say, the first sonata when you know you're going to be playing all five?
No, it shouldn't be, because when you embark on a little journey of 2.5 hours on stage, which is quite difficult stamina-wise, physically and emotionally and psychologically and focus-wise, if you think that you need to save a little bit in order to finish the concert, most likely, it's not going to be a good concert. So I think that solving problems step by step, as it usually should be done in life, is quite applicable to a large program such as this. So if one goes on stage to play first sonata, one should go on stage and play first sonata without thinking about sonata number 5 or dinner afterwards. So,
well, maybe I should ask this question. Are you actually going to play them in order?
Yes.
You are playing in order. Yeah. What about musically speaking? If you know you're going to play in a short period of time all of them, mm-hmm. does that context suggest that you might play the first sonata differently than if you were just playing the first sonata on a program of other music?
Oh, if that's a question, I certainly it does.
I think that because they represent the first two, the third, and the last two represent basically the three such distinct periods of Beethoven's life, it gives us, the performers, a wonderful sense of perspective of how things are going to change. You know, when you begin the concert and you really feel, I feel at the piano that at times that I'm playing Haydn, and that's perfectly fine because, you know, that's exactly the same time when Haydn was writing his last piano sonatas. But I know how my touch and my sound production and my phrasing is going to evolve when I get to sonata number 3. It's actually a wonderful thing to have in mind. And with any one recital dedicated to one composer, you get that feeling of you embark not only on your journey, but you also kind of traverse a composer's life with the pieces.
If you're going to play just one sonata, might you be inclined or at least tempted to bring in some of the sounds that he would have had in mind, say, in the fifth sonata?
That's a tough question.
That might not happen.
That's a tough question. I think I've heard it. I've heard it done. I think that there is. Yes, sometimes maybe we trespass in terms of chronology or style because it's Beethoven, and you know I can just speak for myself as a pianist. In an early piano sonatas, there is enough different things happening that he probably did keep in later works, and you're very tempted to approach those youthful works as if Beethoven was already 50. Maybe that's wrong, but I really don't think anyone holds a definite answer to that. A person is a person, you know. It's just nice to see the development. It's like pianists playing all Beethoven sonatas in a cycle of six concerts, you know. It's kind of you're traveling through the composer's life with the composer hand by hand. It's a wonderful feeling, actually.
I wonder if it would be useful for listeners who are really inclined to do this and happen to own recordings of these pieces to at least sample some of the cello sonatas before they come to the recital so that they might sort of have a little context themselves in which to enjoy a live performance of everything straight through. Some people might be inclined to do this. Maybe not many, but...
I've seen at our North Carolina concert at least one person brought a score and kept following throughout the whole thing. I'm sure that person probably also listened to the sonatas before going to a concert. That's kind of my take on that.
One would assume.
Yes.
And that person may or may not have ever played.
Most likely not, but may not even be a professional musician, but certainly showed enough interest to follow along, which is always heartwarming.
Does that ever make you nervous that somebody's checking on you, that you're going to get miss that note or not do what he said or so and so? You probably don't see it often.
You have to assume they're all falling with the score. No.
I had to ask.
Yeah.
Dmitri Steinberg and Dmitri Kuzov, piano and cello respectively, will be playing all five of Beethoven's sonatas. The recital's free.
Yes, it is.
Tomorrow night
free.
At 7:30. So you have no excuse unless you are otherwise engaged. And even if you are, this is an occasion you're not going to get every day or perhaps ever again. You might want to think about canceling that other thing and take advantage of hearing some really fine performers, as you can hear from these live concerts even 7 years ago. And so one assumes that they're musicianship and technique and everything has, and as they said, conception of the pieces has matured and in that time, so it should be even better tomorrow night. 7:30, Smith Recital Hall in Smith Memorial Hall on the University of Illinois campus. It's on Matthews Drive, which happens to dead end at Smith Hall in Urbana on the University of Illinois campus. Dmitri, thank you very much for joining us on the show and for sharing your performances tomorrow night and for sharing your performances from some years ago.
Thank you so much, Kevin, for having us.
This is their performance of the final movement, and there's just two, really, of the second of Beethoven's sonatas, since we heard a late one and then we heard a middle one, and we're going backwards to hear the final movement of that second sonata. Opus 5, number 2 in G minor. Dmitri Kuzov, Dmitri Steinberg, live on Live and Local. Thank you. listening to the final movement of the second of Beethoven's cello and piano sonatas, or piano and cello sonatas. Turn it around if you like, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And I said it's live. I should clarify that that was a live performance recorded in 2006 in Richmond, Virginia. Dmitri and Dmitri are not live with us. I mean, they're alive in the studio here, but they're not playing at the moment. You can hear them play live at Smith Memorial Hall on the U of I campus tomorrow evening at 7:30. Here are some other events you can see and hear live in our listening area over the next couple of days. This is Thursday. That means that the Station Theater is presenting just three more performances, maybe next week as well, of Come Back Little Sheba, the Station Theater in downtown Urbana, 8 o'clock performances each evening. The Illini Strings on the U of I campus are playing in Smith Hall tonight at 7:30. At the Granite Center in Urbana, it's a play called Chocolate Woman Dreams the Milky Way, performance tonight at 7:30. The Joshua Redman Quartet is also at the Granite Center tonight at 7:30. And Sinfonietta Camera performs Verdi's Requiem also at 7:30. So even at the Krannert Center, you have to choose some things if you want to go out tonight. At Illinois Wesleyan University, it's Die Fledermaus at Westbrook Auditorium in Bloomington tonight and tomorrow at 8 o'clock and on Saturday at 7:30. The Illinois Symphony Orchestra is performing their Holiday Pops concerts tomorrow and Saturday. Tomorrow is in the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. Saturday is at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield, both performances at 8 o'clock. And Millikan Theater and Dance Department, Millikan University Theater and Dance Department, are presenting a musical called String tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday. Tomorrow and Saturday at 7:30, Sunday at 2 o'clock. And I will be talking with the director of that production on tomorrow's Live and Local. We'll also be hearing a preview from some young people involved in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, Illinois, with performances Friday and Saturday. Live and Local is supported by The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377, open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. We also have support from the Friends of WYLL and from a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, an agency of the state of Illinois. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. It's 48 degrees at 5 o'clock.